The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Welcome back to the K4 Wins. K4Wins.com is the website. We've got a ton to get into today. Of course, Carolina, Florida. Carolina finally gets off the schneid last night, gets a victory. This show is being recorded, by the way, on Tuesday, May 27th. The Stars and the Oilers still getting after it. Oilers up 2-1. We got Major League Baseball to get into. We've got NBA, Minnesota and OKC, 3-1 OKC. And, of course, also the other matchup. And it's been crazy because the Minnesota-OKC game have actually been a little bit better than I thought they were going to be. But the Indianapolis or the Indiana games with the New York Knicks have just been silly. No one's won a home game yet. Of course, the Knicks have come back down 23 different times. So lots to get into. But first, how are our numbers looking there, Kai? What do we got?
Last week, simple week, 17-8. Our record overall has gone to 467, 241, and 4. Not too shabby. Before you jump into anything, I got to ask Case something about this because I know you're not going to go over these things. So I want to see the road to Omaha has come out, the top 16 seeds. And looking at the odds to win the championship, something is funky. Number one seed, Vandy's plus 1,000, right? Number two seed, Texas is plus 1,600. But Tennessee is the number 14 seed, and they're plus 900. With people in front of them that are plus 4,000. Arkansas is plus 500, but they're a 3 seed, and UNC is plus 900 as a 5, LSU plus 600 as a 6. Case, what's going on in Vegas? Where are these odds coming from?
I mean, I've said this all year every time I've dropped in. I wanted to find a way to get on Tennessee, but the odds are just so prohibitive. I mean, I think the college baseball market is getting a little bit sharper and people are doing things the way I am. The bottom line is Tennessee. I know that's kind of what you're getting at is that they're probably too low, but they are just so sterling statistically. They've just found so many ways to blow game. Their bullpen, I know, has been terrible. They don't really have the pitching depth, but they just have such a strong lineup. I know they have a good number one starter, and they're just getting a lot of respect from winning last year, I guess. I mean, I think for a long time, I think my edge in college baseball, at least futures wise, the only way I bet it is, you know, the analytics and the data that really shape the numbers in the MLB market on a day-to-day basis. I mean, people just weren't paying enough attention to college baseball and they're a lot harder to find. So I feel like they weren't really. And the other thing is the limits just aren't very high. I mean, the really serious gamblers that are doing this for real money, they're not getting any money down on college baseball. They're not paying attention. So now I think it's kind of coming towards me in the way I do things. The market kind of reflects. I mean, to me, there are three teams that check every single box that I would want for a national champion, and it's Arkansas, LSU, and Tennessee. And the odds, at least.
Have you seen Vandy and Texas play?
I mean, Vandy's pitching. Here's the thing. I kind of explained this on text yesterday. I want pitching and hitting both like top five data, no black marks, anything. Vanderbilt's pitching is absolutely, put Vanderbilt's pitching with Georgia's offense and we have the national champion right there. But those are two teams that I think check one of the boxes and not the other. Vanderbilt just doesn't have enough power for me. I mean, their power numbers, they're like outside the top 25 in the nation. It would be, not that it can't happen. I mean, anything like Florida didn't hit a lot of the boxes for the national championship of college basketball they won, but it would be a statistical outlier if Vanderbilt won the national championship with their offense. And Texas is the type of team to me that I'm just always going to be against. They have absolutely excelled in all these close games. They have like some voodoo magic. They win all these one-run games. They really don't grade out exceptionally on anything, not on talent index. They're nowhere near talent-wise. You go back to your priors at the beginning of the year compared to some of these other top teams. Pitching-wise, they're good, not great. Hitting-wise, they're good, not great. I know they've won a lot of games, and sometimes that happens. These teams are team of destiny and win these things, but I want a larger sample. So I'd rather look at every single at-bat, every single little trial we can get. And if you do all that, Texas is more middling. If you just look at wins and losses, they should be the top. But the bottom line is the market has progressed long beyond that. That's not going to be the number one thing. And I was looking right before we came on it at the Circa odds, which Circa's taken the most money by far on college baseball to win $500 a pop in the futures market. And you can rebet most of these places like MGM. I tried to make like it was like 100-1, but I tried to make like a $50 bet and they spun me. I'm like, oh, here, you can have $15. So Circa's taking 500 on anything you want. Yeah. And that they have Arkansas as the favorite, I think plus 450. I believe they had LSU, the second favorite at 6-1. I think Tennessee was 10-1. I'm not on Tennessee. I like Tennessee's statistical profile. I'm only on Arkansas and LSU. Then they have Texas and Vanderbilt next behind them. Again, like anything can happen. This is all probability. But I think when I see the sharpest book in the market kind of agreeing with what my numbers are, I feel like it kind of validates my approach. We'll see.
He is the chief editor of the Las Vegas Sun, Case Kiefer. You just heard him, his diatribe there. Of course, Kai Greger right below him has been doing handicapping for years and years. Kip Kiefer, the executive director of the Birmingham Racecourse Casino, right below me. This is K4Wins. K4Wins.com is the website to check it out. I did want to get into something briefly with you, Case, and I know you've taken a lot of the show, but you are the man right there at Ground Zero. The International Gaming Standards Association's Ethical AI Standards Committee has gotten together, and they're trying to make sure the bettors know what the hell they're getting themselves into when they ever hear anything about AI picking ball games and gaming. What does Las Vegas think about artificial intelligence when it comes to gambling?
I mean, I've gotten kind of up on some of the AI stuff now, as I've had to be trained on it for work and got it. I've seen some comical, some guys doing this, like, I know this has been a talking point, but I think it's a little overblown at the moment. I've seen like some humorous mocking of like putting into ChatGPT, hey, read a Billy Walters book and try to start making picks like Billy Walters. And it's hilarious. I mean, the bottom line is AI, especially at this point, is only as good as its prompts. And to get any edge in sports betting, you're going to really need to know what you're doing and really prompt. I think the way that it really could change is, once again, I mean, the biggest markets, what's shaping it are the guys with availability to the best data and that build the best models that spit out the best numbers. And that is one area that I'm not super up on AI, but I do know it can help a lot with the coding. So if you have this really good, if you have, you know, a really good model that you're trying to sharpen, trying to fine tune, I do think if you fed it all in, again, I think it's all about the prompts. You gave it the right prompts and you said, you know, where can I basically to find some bugs in the model, find some things where it is not over or underperforming. And I think a big thing with these models is just back testing. You know, you want to go back through 25 years of data and see how your model's performing it, you know, going into games versus closing game. I think AI will make it a lot easier for that. But again, I mean, right now this only applies to the top 0.01% of bettors. I don't think it's helpful right now for the vast majority of people. I know it's something people have an eye on, but I think the industry right now in general is kind of like me. It's kind of like, we know it's there, it's at arm's length, but right now, I mean, if it's helping anyone, I would think that it is the bookmakers for sure, because I'm sure people are...
It is pretty amazing that, I used to deal with this guy out of Cincinnati. He had PredictionMachine.com, and it's been out for 15, 20 years. I don't even know if it's around anymore. And it does make you feel better as a bettor when you're putting something into a computer and it's spitting something out. I know a lot of the top dogs, including yourself, have your own computer analogs, and it's only as good as the information you put in. So, I mean, that's really, really important. To do that. And for someone like yourself who does it for a living, you're really good at it. Kip, let's jump into the NBA, my friend. The Knicks and the Pacers, no one's won a home game yet. Does it happen later on tonight in Indiana? They're giving up 2.5, 220.5. By the way, the Bone, I have to ring my bell when I get a chance, because it's not very often. 9-2 in NBA team totals and overs. And I've loved the NBA so far when it comes to playing the overs. But the Knicks and Pacers later on tonight, Indiana up 2-1. Does the Knicks, do they even up the series again on the road? There's what, they have 6-1 or 5-1 on the road in the playoffs,
which is crazy, because I didn't have them rated a very formidable road team during the year. My artificial intelligence, and believe me, it is artificial, suggests that, and I said it the other night, and I don't have the data and the numbers and all that. I just go by a lot of the eye test and look for trends. I did try to warn everybody on Friday night that I just stuck in my mind with the game in Indiana, what happened with the Pacers in their last series when they went to Cleveland and went home with a 2-0 lead. Everybody looked like was jumping on the Indiana bandwagon that this is just a formality. Now they're going to go ahead and wipe the Knicks out. I just was haunted by that Game 3 in that series where Cleveland completely reversed the trend and won the game. And then the Knicks, of course, came right back. with that same kind of performance. And I think it's the third time they've had more than a 20-point deficit in the third quarter in these playoffs and made up the difference seemingly in the blink of an eye and won. So if the trend still holds from the last series, of course, Indiana came back in game four, and that was the ultimate performance by the Pacers. I think maybe when you win the first two games on the road, maybe you don't have the sense of urgency to get back home in that first game. You're just kind of getting settled back in. But remember game four in the Cleveland series, Indiana went berserk. They had like, you know, 100 points at the end of the third quarter. Yep. I mean, they just were unstoppable. So my sense is that that kind of onslaught may be coming again. They're back home. Now it's 2-1. There's a little more of a urgent situation that they've got to hold serve on their home court. And it just doesn't make logical sense that the road team is going to win all four games in the first four games of the series. So I'm a big lean on the Pacers tonight.
I kind of agree with you. And I think a lot of people said that their pace is just so much fun to watch. It's like an all-star game almost every single night. And everyone kept talking about the Knicks. They could stick with this team for two or three nights, but can they play that way for seven straight nights? Because Indiana, they just want to run. And as a matter of fact, they've gone over two different games in this particular series. And in both those games, it went more than 5 minutes without scoring a bucket and still went over. I mean, it's possession time is just unbelievable. We'll get into more of that. We'll get some picks coming up a little bit later on in the show. And of course, Minnesota and OKC. OKC up 3-1. Game five coming up Wednesday, Kai. What are your thoughts on OKC? They changed it out. A valiant effort by, of course, Minnesota last night, but OKC gets the victory by two.
Like you said, you had the over last night. I mean, I'm probably going to ride with that tonight just with you. I think Indiana's going to do the same thing and make it 3-1 tonight. I can't see OKC dropping many more. I mean, I think they win at least in six, if not in five. Kind of be surprised if they didn't go ahead and win game five, to be honest. But I have spent so much time, believe it or not, watching hockey. I knew last night that the Panthers had no chance because I was watching ESPN bets, and the two best bets of the night were Florida on the puck line and Carolina under 2.5 goals. And I was like, okay, let's take the over.
I'm going the other way.
And let's make sure we bet Carolina. Mm-hmm. It was just, I just knew as soon as Joe and the guy they call Puck Daddy, I know if I'm giving them props here on our show, whatever. But I love watching that. I know that Case knows some of those people, but I just love seeing every time that that one guy picks one way. I love to go the other way. Just like I see, their eye candy on the show when she picks. Going the absolute opposite way also, but they do give a lot of bets you can only get on ESPN bets that you cannot True. Get anywhere else.
Yeah.
Single game parlays with, props and totals that, you'll see totals everywhere, whether it be Circa or online books here that are 219 and they'll give, over 214.5. And I'm like, what the hell? So anyway, I got off on my tangent and we'll go on from there. But yeah, I blame, Kiefer, family for getting me more and more into a playoff hockey. And I've hated it because, now that Vegas is eliminated and then, of course, the Predators, the two teams I pull for. But I've had a lot of fun, although I have to say last night's game sucked.
The Hurricanes 0-15. They've been swept the last three Eastern Finals, and of course, that's just amazing. And that's the second longest losing streak. There's actually been a longer one, and I was hoping last night they get a victory just because I didn't want to see them get swept again. They were catching a .145. They get the victory. Then of course you got the Stars and the Oilers ended up 2-1 right now. Case, what's that series looking like for you?
I'd say I roll it back. You can roll the tape maybe a month or month and a half ago. I said something definitive at the beginning of the NHL playoffs. I said, it is not even close. The two best teams talent-wise are Florida and Edmonton. And it just comes down to if you think they're healthy enough to get there. Now at the time, I mean, full disclosure, I wasn't right about everything. I said that I thought Edmonton was really banged up and it was going to be tough. And they still are kind of banged up. I mean, I say this every show. I feel like I'm giving the guys so much love, but Matthias Ekholm, they're probably fourth, fifth most important player, still has not played in the playoffs. He might play next game. But, the bottom line is that they signed all these veterans in the offseason that people thought were done, and it seemed like it didn't work in the regular season. But really, you know, they've kind of been more like an NBA team. It just seems like they've saved an extra gear for the postseason, or all these guys that have stepped up. And I think the Oilers have been just kind of on another level right now. Same as Florida. I'm not surprised really with how the Edmonton-Dallas series has gone so far, but the Florida-Carolina series, I could not believe Florida went up 3-0. I really thought that was going to be a battle. I know, like you said, Florida swept them 2 years ago. But really, Carolina felt like they were the better team, and all those, I think two of the games were overtime. One of them was like a score in the final minute. I mean, those games were like total knockout, drag out battles. And this one, this series has kind of been the opposite. Well, last night, I mean, Carolina was, it was one-sided for Carolina, but the first three games were obviously all Florida. All that being said, I mean, Florida, we have seen blow a 3-0 lead before. I know they ultimately ended up beating the Oilers in the Stanley Cup final last year in game seven, but they were up 3-0. Ended up going to a game seven. I don't know with this going back to Carolina. I think Florida's a slight favorite. I would probably favor them to get it done on Wednesday, but who knows? I think Carolina hasn't put its best foot forward. I know Rod Brind'Amour made a bunch of changes last night, so I would be a little cautious just writing that one off. I think Florida probably gets it done, but that one has been crazy. Edmonton-Dallas, I mean, it could be fun. I will say tonight's game, hopefully, three major caveats. One, which I'm always going to be, you can't get the number I got right now. It's really tough to price them accurately with how much of a step they've made. And three, I've just got so much Edmonton future exposure that I've been betting Dallas aggressively just so I can kind of monetize it one way or the other. So I do think Dallas will get a better effort tonight. They really didn't play bad in game three. Stuart Skinner just kind of stood on his head, and
which is crazy.
Was incredible. I'm checking all my boxes for this show. I'm always the Stuart Skinner defender. I could not understand game one. People just hate the Oilers, I guess. I get yelled at. I remember going back. I've always told the rule in the NHL is you can't blame power play goals on the goalies. It's not the goalie's fault. If a goalie everyone likes gives up all these power play, you hear that. But Stuart Skinner, the Oilers are playing like goons with a 3-goal lead. They go four times in the penalty box and score every time. And all of a sudden, Stuart Skinner's the guy on the firing line.
He's the GOAT. Yeah.
I mean, I know he's a mental midget, and you know, he has some mental issues, but the guy has shutouts and what, three games so far since he's come back. Their defense is playing much better. So as you can probably tell by the way I'm talking, I lean Edmonton to win the series, but I really think Dallas should have a good effort tonight in game four.
So is everyone on Florida, Edmonton in the AHL, and OKC in Indiana in the NBA?
I'm not as ready to write off the Knicks as you guys, to be honest. I'm not saying if I had to make a pick right now, it would be Indiana, Oklahoma City. But and I have not bet this game tonight. This got to be the first time all year I have not had a single NBA bet two nights in a row. This is right on market for me. I have Indiana 1.5 point favorite in game four with a 221 total. I think technically they're a 2 point favorite. I really think the Knicks have better personnel. I like their team better in total. I'd say the thing that's keeping me off of them is I have so much respect for Rick Carlisle. I feel like game three was kind of Thibodeau's time to make these adjustments, and they really worked out well. He finally changed his starting lineup. He finally went deeper into his bench. He finally dared Halliburton to just be a facilitator like he wants to be instead of shooting. I think Indiana needs him to kind of take over like he did at the end of game one. Now I feel like game four is going to kind of be Carlisle's turn to counterpunch with what he does. And because of that, that's the only reason it's keeping me off the Knicks now. So it seemed like all you guys, I think Kip even said big lean to the Pacers tonight. To me, it would be very, very tiny lean to the Knicks. But if one of those four teams, I got to say, ruins it, I'd have to lean the Pacers.
So Kip Kiever, for the first time in NBA history, team's gotten down 20 points, not once, not twice, but three different times, and have come back to win those ball games. We're talking about the Knicks. They're 6-1 on the road, by the way, and no one's won a home game in that series. I don't know what to think of the Knicks. I don't know if they're the cardiac kids. I don't know if this team is resilient. I don't know what that says about a team that continually gets down by 20 and has to come back. And if you want to split the teams up, you can sit there and say, listen, if you take the second half and put it in the first half, the Knicks are up by 20, right? So they're on the other end of it. It just so happens they need to get down 20 first before they come back. But what's going on with the Knicks?
You know, I can't figure them. I didn't have them rated as a particularly high road team during the season. For them to have this kind of success away from the Garden has been really surprising to me. But it's just the demeanor of that team. And I I think for whatever reason, they don't panic when they're behind. They know that it's just a matter of three or four possessions. If you get some stops and you make some shots, you can get right back in games. And a lot of teams will kind of come unglued when they have a big deficit. And this team doesn't seem to do that, but it's just not a trend that I think is likely to continue in terms of the road team winning every game in this series. I did have the Pacers rated during the year as a team that on their home court was even a lot more dangerous. I remember in our selections week to week, the Pacers got on a bad roll on a West Coast trip once, and I picked against them three straight games when they were favored in two of those, and they lost outright. So the trends change, and I think Case may have hit on something where coaches make adjustments game to game now, when maybe the old school coaches, well, this is my team, we're going to go with what's got us here. Now, if you make some radical changes, I think you can really alter the course of a series. But at the end of the day, I think it plays out pretty much like it's supposed to. And that's why I kind of expect Indiana to get back on the track tonight.
Yeah, Cakes is
I like them from start to finish. I like them. So it hasn't happened yet. I like the adjustment, just like Case was talking about. I like Indy first quarter, first half for the game. And I think they score 135 points.
We'll see. I mean, is Thibodeau a brilliant coach, or is he over there with his arms crossed? He looks like an idiot when he's down by 20, yeah. But I mean, he seems to be putting the right pieces in, man.
Yeah. I don't know, how much we lost. I was talking about earlier, but I mean, that is, to me, that's where Indiana has the biggest edge, is on the bench. I don't hate Thibodeau or anything. I think he's probably even an above average coach, but I just think tactically, Rick Carlisle, I think so highly of, and that's right. What's keeping me off of the Knicks here in game four, which I would still lean that way. I think we're giving the Pacers an awful lot of credit for that 20 point lead in game three. I know it means something, but let's not forget the Knicks blew a gigantic lead in game one. Let's X out the overtime in game one, and the scoring margin in this series, Indiana has won by 1 point. I mean, it's not like I know the Pacers get running and they look sexy. They're super fun to watch. But, you know, from a quality standpoint, this has been super even. One team doesn't jump off the page is way better than the other one to me. Again, I would probably take the Knicks personnel, but Carlisle makes me kind of sit here a little bit and say I don't really want to get involved with the Knicks tonight. We'll see what happens. I think for entertainment purposes, it'd be nice if the Knicks won, because we're going to have a long break before the finals if both these series are wrapped up right away. And I do think the Pacers, if they go up 3-1, are probably going to get it done in game five or game six. But I don't know, slightest of leans tonight for me to New York, but I won't be betting it.
And every time I look at Carlisle,
you know, the NBA executives are on their knees going, please let New York win this series. It can't be Indianapolis against Oklahoma City.
No doubt.
That's just an absolute nightmare for executives.
You need a major market in there for sure. That's for sure. Major League Baseball, we are just flying through it. The Yankees have won 7 of 8. The Tigers, the Mariners, they all lead their respective divisions. The Phils, the Cubs, and the Dodgers in the National League. Kai, what kind of strange going ons or Major League Baseball? I was looking for some streaks and interesting things right now. A lot of teams have won 2, lost 2, won 1. Not any really major streaks. Tampa Bay's won 6 in a row. That's the longest winning streak we have in Major League Baseball right now. But anything that's kind of turned your ears? Baltimore turned it around. The Atlanta Braves still look like they're inept, even though Acuna's back. They just can't score runs. What's going on?
Hey, let's look at it. Two teams in Major League Baseball have losing records, but have the positive run differential. The Braves and your Reds.
Yeah, I know.
Braves plus 11. The Reds are plus 28 runs, which is kind of amazing. Only Cleveland has a winning record with a losing
run. That's with the Reds being shut out 1-0 four times this year.
They've lost. I saw something. I think it said that the Reds have lost more one-run games than anybody on the year. Now, I don't know if that's true. I saw something. May have even been on the ESPN. Cleveland's 29-24. They're negative 16 run differential. Only 7 teams have winning records on the road in Major League Baseball right now. And, you know, I love looking at run differentiations, especially when you combine that with pitching, the lineups, and who's playing where. I mean, like the Yankees are, you know, when they play Baltimore, look at this. The Yankees are plus 111 runs, you know, in these games, where Baltimore's minus 92. Or like tonight, you've got the Mets who are plus 60 runs. And they're at home, against the White Sox, who are minus 51 runs.
Now, I got to ask you, back up.
The Mets at home, minus 1.5.
Back up just a little bit.
Kind of game.
Kai, back up just a little bit. Why do you look at run differentials? I mean, you're going to have those nights where you lose 23-5, and that's an 18-run differential. You're still a loser, but it's no different than losing 1-0. But why does that mean so much to you?
Well, I would challenge you to go and look to see how many teams have lost 23-5 this year.
Yeah.
You know, that and yeah, there are some big things, but the run differential goes into your hitting. And one of the things Case was talking about, like with Vandy, Vandy beat Tennessee 10-0 this weekend. They didn't have an extra base hit. Now the Yankees, if they don't have an extra base hit, they have no chance of winning. Cause that's different because, you know, you have teams that are going to run. So the run differential to me, you can't just say, okay, well, I mean, you can with the Yankees and the White Sox maybe, but if the Yankees and Mets are playing, you also have got to look at your on base percentage. You've got to look at who's pitching. You've got to look at the pitching matchups, righty versus lefty, and all of those things go into it. But at the end of the day, if one team's mashing the ball and the other team's not, just using common sense.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with you too. I mean, it's interesting. I mean, when I look at my Reds and the fact that they got a positive, I can't believe they have a positive differential just because of those 4-1-0 games. It ultimately, Case, comes down to pitching. And I think the trade deadline's coming up, and obviously the All-Star break's right around the corner as well. And I think that's going to play into a lot of it right now with the Yanks, the Tigers, the Mariners, the Phils, the Cubs, and the Dodgers, those six leaders. How many of those are still leading at the break?
Ooh, that's a good question. Especially because, I mean, the Dodgers, I think, have the shortest lead, and they're not, obviously, they don't seem very vulnerable, even though their pitching once again for another year is beaten up. I'd say you probably have to make the over, and a lot of them have big leads. I'd say you have to make the over under like 4.5. I mean, I don't see a lot of these teams faltering. I do think NL East is going to be back and forth all year. I mean, you saw the Mets get off their super hot start. Now this month, the Phillies have the best record in baseball in May. I've been kind of relatively down on the Phillies. And I know the Braves have been a pain to watch, and Kip might disagree with me being frustrated from watching this team, but their run is coming. I mean, they're going to get super hot one of these months. I think they're going to be right in it too. I mean, they're 8.5 back right now, so I'd probably say they're not leading by the All-Star break, but I wouldn't even rule out looking at some Braves futures prices. I really think that NL East is just going to be a gauntlet to the end. And, you know, just to expand on, I didn't expect AP statistics to be the theme of the show today, but it's kind of what I talked about in college baseball. Goes along with what Kai says for the run line, the run differentials. I mean, you can get even more into it, but the bottom line is you just want more trials. I mean, there's a lot of noise and wins and losses. I mean, how many crazy things happen in these games? There's errors. I mean, a one run game, there's the slimmest of things can flip it. I mean, the baseball analytics like revolution was just cluster luck. Like we put so much into like these teams able to piece together a bunch of hits in the same inning. But what if a team has 14 hits in a game, but they're just getting one hit per inning? It's really kind of bad luck at the end of the day that they don't get it. So I think any way you can expand the scope and just look more beyond, wins, losses. We have what, like 50 some trials this year. I mean, runs, we have hundreds of trials. At bats, we have thousands. So you really want to get, you want to get as granular as you can to create an edge. So I think that's why that is important. Yes, I got off on a tangent away from your original question, but no, my total for leaders at the All-Star break, probably 5. I'd make it a 4.5, over under 4.5 with the juice number.
That is amazing, though, because Major League Baseball fans, I love stats as much as the next guy. They go so far with stats. And of course, if you watch ESPN, I saw a stat today about Aaron Judge in the last 16 games has been on base 2.7.6 times. I was like, and I don't even know where the stat was going. Obviously, he's been hitting the cover off the baseball very, very well. But I was like, I don't even know what that stat means. I don't know if that's beanball. I don't know if we're supposed to be using it for something. But yeah, it's just amazing. Amazing to me that
you said over under 4.5 leading into All-Star break. I'll take under.
Thank you.
Huge. I'll take under. Huge.
All right. We'll make a friendly wager. We'll revisit it at the All-Star break.
And Kim,
I guess the NL East is one for sure. I'm just down on the Astros, so they're only 1.5 back though. Yeah,
I think Texas will overtake Seattle. I can see that. Philly and Mets and the Braves. I think that was up in the air. I think the Cubs will hold. The Yankees should hold. Detroit should hold, but I don't think the Dodgers, I mean, they're 4-6, you know, their last 10, but you look, hell, the Padres are 3-7. In their last 10.
And so, lucky to win one of those games. The Braves on Friday night in that 2-1 game where Acuna hit a 467-foot home run, the first pitch he saw after being off for a year. The Braves just completely blew that game. And in the ninth, they had the tying run on second. And inexplicably, the pinch runner, Eli White, ran halfway to third on a ball that he saw drop and tried to run back to second, which made no sense whatsoever. So Case's point is right. The way some of these teams invent a way to lose in games that they've got every opportunity to win. If you watch baseball day to day, every game, that's the plot line. It's an untimely bad throw. It's a stupid base running mistake. It's a guy who comes up, all he has to do is put the ball in play, and he strikes out on three pitches. Baseball is, I know there's a lot of numbers that probably can determine things, but the way most games are decided are by somebody screwing something up.
A lot of these teams are one injury away, and it could be, I mean, Boston, who would have thought Tristan Casas being out would be such a huge big deal to Boston and even create controversy for Devers, you know, there when they asked him to go to first base and he said no.
Yeah.
And he came back out and said maybe, and, you know, all these different things. But what happens if Aaron Judge gets hurt and is out for 2 or 3 weeks for the Yankees? You know, what happens if Shohei Ohtani decides I want to throw the ball and tears his shoulder up for the Dodgers and can't play, you know? What happens if Soto decides he doesn't want to run hard to first for the Mets and they bench him again? You know,
that's already happened. Like, yeah. That. Yeah, that's already happened.
Yeah, I, for sure.
I got to defend my book. I mean, maybe the right number is over under 4, but there's no way it's over under 3.5 lead by the All-Star break. So I don't think 4.5 is a bad number. I got to find something.
3.5. And that's why it's 4.5. You want people to go on both sides.
Real quick.
Go ahead.
Real quick, Tony, I read a great article this morning as posted on ESPN, and I think this is in Case and Kai's wheelhouse, about the nightmare. That's the word used by the Caesars Palace sportsbook manager that the Colorado Rockies are for sportsbooks in Las Vegas. It's, we can't make the number high enough to get people to go the other way. Go ahead, Kai.
Oh, sorry. It glitched, I thought. But you know what their run differential is? Minus 173 runs.
Yeah. He says people are killing them of betting the other side and betting them under their run total. That's it. It's like jeopardy.
That's the thing is, normally when the price is so high, what do? You give up run differentials. You can't make that run differential high enough. I mean, what are you going to take? Mike Concho
came in there and got a couple of bombs, and then he's gone cold. His real name is Jordan Beck, but as a Tennessee fan, he's gone cold.
Case, I thought the most interesting thing in that article was the series they had 2 weeks ago against the Padres, where they lost 21-0, then were swept in a doubleheader by about a combined score of 25-2. They were such a huge dog in game four of that series, but the Rockies shocked the world and won 9-3. He said the score for the books was as comparable to the highly successful NFL Sunday.
Yeah, I saw the story too. Yeah, it's pretty wild how bad the Rockies are. I mean, I don't have much to add. I will say I'm looking for it now, so he must have deleted it. One of the Circa executives who books bets kind of chirped back and kind of made the point that this is the low of bookmaking we've come to now. If people are bit, there's always a price you can go to make money. I mean, you can charge them out the wazoo, and there's just not. I mean, they're not paying high enough. There's not a lot of talent in bookmaking right now. So I never feel sorry for the bookmakers when they're crying about things like this. They have every edge in there. It's very interesting, not taking anything away from the stories, but they'll be just fine, and they're not doing their jobs if they can't find a way to monetize it correctly.
You don't have to worry about us feeling sorry for the bookmaker. I always love it when I have a good week and I go, hey, man, you just won me a trip to Florida. And he goes, yeah, well, last year you bought my family 3 cars.
Yeah.
Great. Super. It's an even deal. Touche. All right, K4Wins.com, K4Wins.com. Check out the website. We got great articles on there. It's free. You can subscribe to it, K4Wins.com. We got some exciting things happening starting next week. We're going to be going live on some platforms, which is going to be great. And along with the rest of the guys, we greatly appreciate everyone checking out our site, K4Wins.com, and listening to it right here on Tony Curry Radio. Thank you, gentlemen. Appreciate you, man.
Yep.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.